Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to another conversation here on The Mark Steiner Show. It is the centennial of Maryland Legal Aid. Yes, the centennial. And by way of disclosure, let me say that I will be the MC at their event, and also I'm on their celebration committee. And so to let you know that, this is not like a favoritism show. It's a show of importance, whether I was there or not, because legal aid has played such an important role in our society and in our city and in our communities. And as you've heard in the show before, one of my oldest, dearest friends, Clinton Bamberger, who is was the first head of legal aid nationally, helped get that started under the Kennedy administration. It has gone through a lot of changes and alterations over the years, and we are celebrating its 100th anniversary now. We have with us here in our studios in Hamden, Wilhelm Joseph, who is the executive director of Maryland Legal Aid. Jose Anderson is a professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law, who's writing, I believe, a history of legal aid. Ned Bamberger III is vice president of M&T Bank's Treasury Management Division, and they are a sponsor of the event. So let me welcome Wilhelm, Jose, and Ned to the program. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
So it is. I was shocked when I heard it was the 100th anniversary of legal aid, that idea of legal aid has been in our society this long. And Jose, you are writing history, is that correct?
Yes, I've been working on a history project in conjunction with the Maryland Access to Justice Commission and with the cooperation of many people, including Michael Milliman at the University of Maryland Law School and many others, and with the agency, the Legal Aid Bureau, Mr. Joseph has been gracious to allow me access to really the whole century of records, and it's been very exciting.
And thank you, Jose. When Jose gave his first introduction to that history before the Access to Justice Commission, he lit a fire. Everyone was excited and immediately said, I am not going to miss it.
And that, your bank has chosen to be a kind of sponsor of this great celebration.
Lead sponsor.
Lead sponsor.
Very proud of that. And we look forward to supporting Maryland Legal Aid now and in the future.
So let's talk about the importance of this, of legal aid. Because, you know, we hear the name all the time. And we don't think about what it really means. I mean, it's just one of those organizations there that, especially if you are indigent, if you're poor, if you are struggling and have to find a lawyer, one of the places in people's minds, there's always the name legal aid. That's in kind of almost seared into the consciousness of people like that, and that's what it means to folks. But let's give, I bet you a dollar to a donut that most people wouldn't even know what legal aid does, other than what I've just described.
That's correct. I think the name legal aid connotes to most people legal assistance for someone who is criminally charged. Because we hear every day, you have the right to a lawyer if you remain silent, you know, all the sitcoms.
Right.
But the legal aid with which we are involved is on the civil side. In no state is there an absolute right to a lawyer if you have a civil dispute, if you are a victim of domestic violence, if you are unlawfully being evicted, if you be denied a benefit to which you are entitled, you have no right to a lawyer. So we are on the civil side of the equation. And most people have issues on the civil side. And we are
not the criminal side. Most legal cases are around civil issues.
Exactly.
Right.
And there's no right to counsel. And we are a non-profit charitable organization. We are not a branch of government. And we seek funding from every possible source, federal government source, state government source, local governments, foundations, law firms, individuals, wherever resources can be had, we go. And this thing began with funding from the Associated Jewish Charities back in 1911.
As we go back in history here, one of the things that struck me as you were speaking was, and that's part of the battle in America now, legally speaking, that Stephen Sachs and other lawyers, public justice centers, other places have been battling, which is this idea of civil Gideon,
yes.
The idea that people should have a right to a lawyer for civil cases, and they don't. So organizations like Legal Aid, especially Legal Aid, are the ones who kind of try to fill that breach.
Right. I mean, we talk about poor people in general and our clients, you know, the notion, well, why should they get a lawyer? Because I can't afford one myself. Well, we're talking about people who have been recently ill. They have lost their job. They have been unemployed for a long time. They are disabled. They are children. All these people need help. And those are the folks we help.
And Jose, that history I spoke of, I mean, when Wilhelm just said that it's not a government agency, there was a time in the 60s when the Legal Services Corporation actually funded a lot of the work, but there were a lot of political things that happened that ended a great deal of that.
Just an interesting point, Mark. What has happened in the nation is that prior to war on poverty agenda of the 60s. This was primarily charitable outreach to provide civil legal service, and also, you know, good faith members of the bar who would extend legal services to certain types of causes. But during the 60s, government had a transformative period where it determined that citizens were better served if civil justice access were increased. And during that period of time, the funding was much more generous for such pursuits. And the idea was it led to a better quality of life, more justice, more quality of life. And during those years, many expansions were made in access to justice, and then that really started to come to an end in the 1980s with the Reagan administration, who didn't see a lot of merit in expanding such things, and in fact, he started to withdraw funds. Now, ironically, Richard Nixon in 1974 advocated sort of the continuation of these initiatives, but Ronald Reagan's administration really cut back and actually tried to do things to limit the reach of legal services for those who needed it on the civil side.
In fact, under the Reagan administration, the annual recommendation from the White House to Congress was to fund legal services at $0. And as Jose said, they successfully, in 1981, cut the funding by about one-third. And that led to immediate closing of offices and so on and so forth.
So, I'm curious, Ned, why is your bank so prominently involved in this?
Well, the M&T is a community bank, first and foremost. And we are always looking for partners that serve the communities. And we know that Maryland Legal Aid does that, and they provide the legal expertise and advice that poor people and other minorities so desperately need. So we're happy to do it.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's New E-Zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I think it would be important, one of the things we talked about, Wilhelm, in our meetings about this program and ideas, was to maybe even talk to some clients, which we couldn't do, but to give people a sense of the kinds of cases, the kind of battles that have been fought, both recently and in the past. I mean, that kind of give a sense of the power of the work of legal aid attorneys. Because, you know, let's just start with that, and I'll come back to the other question.
Okay. You know, I think when we talk, we use the words access to justice. What we mean is that an individual who has a grievance or perceive that they're being done wrong, no matter how simple it is, wants to feel I can get this thing resolved with some fairness, within some rules. In our society, you know, governed by the rules of law, it says that if someone is in an apartment and there's a dispute with the landlord, the best place for that to be resolved is within the court and within rules and with people who are skilled in getting those things sorted out. We don't want them to go on the street to sort it out. If
at least a different kind of court.
Right. and then there are simple things like, well, if you are going to terminate a benefit to which the government says I'm entitled, there should be first some procedures that have just the basic sort of due process. And if those procedures exist, then you must comply with them. You cannot be an overzealous, let's say, person and do your own thing because you feel that's the way you do it. You follow the rules. And that's basically what we're talking about. So sometimes it's about an eviction. It's sometimes about a spouse or a girlfriend or boyfriend threatens the other. He or she who's being threatened is not aware of the protections he might have. And a false threat puts them, or any kind of threat, puts them in fear of what might happen. Oh, he said that if I complained, he could take my children and send them off to another state. He said, sometimes all they want is assurance of how does this happen. My child was removed from school unfairly. How do I solve that? See, the poor people usually, it's not just a matter of lack of financial resources. It's a lack of power, lack of access, a lack of just representing themselves in things that other people take for granted. But now we have the new group of people who are formerly middle-class people. They're articulate, they're educated, supposedly connected, but they have never been unemployed for a year or more, like right now, and don't know where to turn for assistance. Bankruptcy, unemployment insurance, be denied food stamps, whatever. That's the phenomenon we're seeing now.
And Jose, I wonder historically if you want to kind of add on to that.
It's very interesting, and I think great symbolic significance that a community bank like M&T is involved in sponsoring this event, celebrating the history, because many of the issues that have risen over the years have involved, persons that have had financial issues or collection issues that might involve their housing or credit and so forth. And what the Legal Aid Bureau has done through years of litigating and trying to consolidate these issues is to bring clarity to the system of justice. And it's important to understand that is really a partnership among stakeholders in the community, because we need clarification in the law very often. Sometimes we talk about court, we think about court, there's sort of a good guy, bad guy mentality, but the truth of the matter is, when you're dealing with a lot of people and issues that are common to a lot of community stakeholders, really, you don't have to have necessarily bad faith for a need for the system to be clarified. So through the years, Legal Aid has legal cases that have involved collection and housing and various issues that affect a large group of people. And going back even to the beginning, they have been involved in clarifying the fairness, the due process that is required. You know, due process is a very general term, and defining what it means in individual circumstances or with changed circumstances sometimes require that these disputes get resolved in court, and without lawyers, they have nowhere to be resolved with clarity that actually in the long run benefits everyone that's involved in trying to make, you know, our justice system and to keep our justice system the best in the world.
So I and it it's funny. I was thinking as you both were talking, and see what the three of you think that, you know, a lot of people think that people who practice law and end up being lawyers of legal aid, the first thing in people's minds are, oh, well, they must not be good lawyers, right? Am I right? I mean, people do think that.
That's one of the...
It's this perception that somebody, perception, you know?
Until you are a lawyer who's up in court against a legal aid lawyer, or the judges who see what we do, or your clients who benefit from our services, they know better.
And as I was reading in some histories, and I'm sure you're writing with this, Jose Anderson, and the lawyers who have come back to legal aid out of private practice.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. Legal aid has both a front door and a back door with respect to the commitment and quality of those that have worked. Historically, the finest members of the bar, even from large prestigious firms, have been directly involved in the work of the board and in the work of deciding how to expand services. The one thing that the history of legal aid in Maryland definitely makes clear is that from its inception, there was never an attitude that the representation that would be given would be anything but first rate. And that's very important because that's not the culture everywhere with respect to legal services. The members of the bar of even the largest, most powerful firms in the city from the very beginning understood that the profession was only strong as the biggest problem that it wanted to solve, and it always made sure that the Legal Aid Bureau would provide first-rate representation. If they couldn't provide it first-rate, they didn't expand it to certain areas, or they didn't take on certain cases. They said that whatever they did, they wanted to do first class, and that has been the culture of the many directors of the board, going back to some of the first directors, famous and important names to Baltimore, like Thomas Waxter, and ultimately, even back going to 1911, there have been such prominent people who have stood behind the Bureau's work to make sure the quality is there for those who can't afford it, as if they were paying for the services.
Well, one of my just favorite cases that Legal Aid had, and I remembered well, was the legal case in Annapolis at the Bloomsbury Public Housing Project, when, you know, that when and this is not an aside against developers. I have a lot of good friends who are developers, and there's a lot of really decent people in that world, lots of them. But when poor folks, poor black folks in the public housing had a place that was literally on the waterfront.
Was that in the integrated housing? Black and white.
And people wanted to move them out.
Right.
But the case of legal aid fought kept them in the homes and kept the integrity of that neighborhood alive.
Right. That was a 22-year negotiation with different bodies at the table, state government, county government, legal aid, and other and housing authorities. And the housing these people occupied was in a location that was important for the state legislature to acquire and expand itself. And the negotiations lasted that long because the major issue became, well, what do we do with the current residents of this facility that the state wants to demolish? And, you know, do we just knock it down and let them be on their own? And that negotiation took a long time to figure out, well, we'll knock it down, we'll build a comparable or even a better facility just off to the side of it, and it ended up being a very nice, probably described by some folks as the best housing, public housing in America. And we thought that was a very good solution. And I remember the day very well when ground was broken and all the top steel officials were there with their shovels, proudly, witnessing this event. And that's sort of where Jose pointed to it. Maryland has a very interesting history of being the leaders in matters of justice. And Jose could talk more about that. I mean, very interesting.
Go ahead, Jose.
Well, I just think that it's important to understand that the dynamics of government assistance being reduced, the dynamics of housing facing many challenges, Supreme Court decisions that have allowed local governments more latitude in acquiring properties and deciding what to do with them. There's a greater need to clarify the boundaries of due process. You know, sometimes these things move very quickly through legislation, private partnerships, financing institutions, and they get in their mind to do a project, which does have lots of benefits. But there are those individuals who are negatively affected, and they might actually have tangible legal rights. Legal aid doesn't win all its cases and doesn't lose all its cases, but the point is they stand there as a protection for those people who might be overlooked in the process, and they don't necessarily need to be intentionally forgotten, just overlooked, and their rights are overlooked, and they stand in the gap for those individuals, and they have done it going back, you know, again, to the beginning of of the century, and particularly recently, various developments in West Baltimore that have gotten a lot of attention where residents had to be displaced because of a new development project through negotiation, through legal cases, through just trying to figure out what the needs were of the residents who were in the housing. Legal Aid continues to do an incredible job keeping an eye on and protecting those who need protecting, and giving them their due process of law as is required by the court.
By the way, folks, we're talking about legal aid in this part of our program today. Legal aid, of course, is in its 100th anniversary, founded here in Baltimore in 1911, the birth year of my father. In 2000, and so this is the 100th anniversary, an organization that led the way in America. Actually started in New York, but led the way in America to fight for the civil rights, the civil legal rights of poor people in our communities. Amazing decisions have come out of it, and there's a huge celebration taking place with that. We are here this hour with you just heard Jose Anderson, who's professor at the University of Maryland, University of Baltimore, School of Law. He's writing a history of legal aid. Wilhelm Joseph is in the studio. He's executive director of Maryland Legal Aid. Has been so since 1996. And Ed Bamberger III is with us on the phone as well, vice president in M&T Bank's Treasury Management Division, and M&T is the lead sponsor of this event to celebrate this 100th anniversary of legal aid. And one of the things I remember really well about legal aid, because I was involved in it, was when the Reagan administration cut the funding, and a lot of money was lost by legal aid in Maryland and across the country. Maryland had this kind of unique thing that they tried that became actually and then it was modeled across America, which was called IOLTA, Interest on Lawyers' Trust Accounts, where they would voluntarily ask the legal community to take the interest from their combined accounts and put them to work for legal aid to kind of make up the budget gap. And it was a huge success. That kind of almost entrepreneurial thinking is almost unheard of.
Yeah, I think Maryland may have been the second state. I think Florida actually led the way. And my good colleague, Bob Rudy and Mr. Bamberger, the other Bamberger, and others.
Clinton Bamberger.
Yes, Clinton Bamberger, Herb Belgrad, and many others got that legislative success so that the small amounts of interest, $1, $2, $3 that would accumulate overnight when aggregated, became something substantial, and that was unique. And that actually became, across the country, the most significant funding source for legal service programs. Interest on lawyers' trust account.
Right.
You know what happened to interest?
Right.
Interest now, according to the Fed rate, is 0 to 0.25.
Right.
So that source has just disappeared.
It has disappeared, but I remember it well. I remember well, because in those days, again, as a disclaimer, I worked then for the Maryland Legal Services Corporation, and that was part of the drive that we had to make that happen across the country.
My one thing, when you mentioned the 100-year celebration, I guess I'd like the listeners to know that there's still time. If you go to the Legal Aid website, www.mdlab.org, and find out how you can get there, because if you miss this one, you'll have to wait 100 more years, and that's a long time.
I don't think we'll be here then.
We don't know.
We don't know. You never know.
You never know.
Now, while we can't talk price on public radio, we will have that on our website, and we do encourage you all to come to this celebration. Harry Belafonte.
Harry Belafonte is our guest speaker and presenter of awards. We have a renowned artist, José Nadeau, who painting live, and we hope that the governor will be there, and with Mr. Belafonte and others, unveil the commemorative painting. It's a wonderful, huge painting, 7.5 feet by 9 feet, to represent the history of legal aid and Maryland and justice.
So José and Ned, what are we leaving out here when we talk about this 100th anniversary? That you want to make sure that that we get out.
He'll be there. José presenting is a little snippet of the history, and that's going to be exciting.
I can't wait for that, José.
I think that we just want to emphasize the transformational work of this particular legal aid bureau. They have been a national leader. They have been a national leader in much of the class action litigation and setting the direction for various groups of rights that need to be protected: migrant workers' rights, prisoners' rights, working cooperatively with government. I want to certainly mention of the many years of work by some of our government officials, for example, Senator Ben Cardin, who even from his days in the Maryland General Assembly understood the importance of getting all the stakeholders involved, the law schools, the law firms, and the community agencies, and agencies that provide other legal services that aren't legal aid. And so I just think that it's a great time to reflect on really the strength and the power and the cooperation that legal aid has done to bring together, you know, really what's a very fine system of providing services for those who need them.
And Ned, a thought from you as we round this out?
Well, my father always echoed this sentiment, and it's that legal aid helps level the playing field. And for those folks that the legal system itself is very complicated and very difficult to navigate, and legal aid helps those that need to understand the law and the rules and the principles of the law, and helps those that really can't help themselves.
So one more time, my dear friend Wilhelm Joseph, what is how can people get tickets? And we can't say a price on public radio, but you can't tell them where to go.
They can go to our website, which is www.mdlab.org.
And we will have that on our website as well. Ned Bamberger, Vice President of M&T's Treasury Management Division, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure to have you. José Anderson, professor at the University of Baltimore School of Law, running the history and also presenting at that conference. So let me say once again that M&T is a lead sponsor for this celebration on Saturday night. And Wilhelm Joseph, Executive Director of Maryland Legal Aid. Always great to see you, and thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
See you all Saturday night.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538.